When she was 18, her father gave her the advice she needed to follow her dreams and become a writer. The next day, he had a heart attack and died in her arms. She did become a writer and a business owner and then a wife and mother. Today, after 13 books, a million of them in print, she's an award-winning syndicated columnist, a radio and TV host, and the owner of two successful companies. And now, Elise is here to help you rebuild your life. Stay tuned. This is gonna be good. This is the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to this week's episode of the Elise Glink Show. I'm your host, Elise Glink, and I'm here to help you make smart choices about your financial life. But first, here's my Glinkonomics report. So the big news this week is still being made at the Fed's Open Market Committee meeting for September. The question on everybody's minds is, will they or won't they? Will they finally start to raise interest rates, or will they push it off into the future? A rate hike, I think, is inevitable because we've seen the Fed maintain an extremely easy money policy for well over 5 years now. And there's really nowhere for interest rates left to go but up. They're as close to zero as they can possibly be. And of course, as we've talked about before in the show, we're seeing actually negative interest rates in parts of Europe and parts of Latin America. Timing is a really big question. Bloomberg just did a rough survey showing that by a thinning majority, analysts still expect the Fed to start rising interest rates this week. But overseas economic instability paired with sort of a tepid jobs report earlier this month make for some increasing uncertainty about the wisdom of raising rates this month. And plus, look what's been going on with China's stock market, the slowing of China's economy. Latin America is looking very unsteady. We've seen some resignations this week. It's a little bit of a concern globally about where things are really going. And to raise interest rates in this environment is considered more and more to be a little bit uncertain. On the other hand, if you don't do it this side of the year, next year's an election year. And the Fed is going to raise all sorts of ire if it starts raising interest rates in advance of a presidential election cycle. So they're really in a rock and a hard place. And it's still anybody's guess as what will happen as of this taping. But the economy and stock market should benefit from the announcement, regardless of whether the Fed makes a move now or holds off another 6 weeks or so. Just knowing what to expect typically is better medicine for anxious investors. All right, with that, on to the rest of the show. My guest today has some great insight into how a Fed rate hike may actually affect current home buying trends. Lorraine Wellard is a senior correspondent for Redfin, and she's got the numbers to share from a recent Redfin survey of home buying customers. And the survey asked a variety of questions regarding how higher mortgage rates could actually influence home buying decisions. After my conversation with Lorraine, stay tuned for a segment on locking in mortgage interest rates. When rates are steadily falling, there tends to be less concern about lenders locking in rates because if they fail to do so, or you fail to get your paperwork in, you would probably wind up with getting a lower interest rate than expected. But now that interest rates are expected to rise, and they in fact have been ticking up just a little bit, if you fail to lock in a rate properly, it means you'll probably end up paying at least a little bit more for your house. Of course, you could always buy a less expensive house, but that's the subject of another story. Now is the time for you to be super smart about getting all the details done so you're locking in the rate you really think you're locking in. Finally, I'm going to share a reminder for anyone who's just paid off a mortgage or who expects to finish paying off a mortgage in the near future. And if you are, congratulations to you. Writing that last check is totally liberating, but it's not the last thing you should do before severing ties with your lender. So I want you to understand what the last step is that you need to take to make sure that all the relevant records reflect the fact that you have discharged this debt and that the lender acknowledges it. And I've got a quick rundown on some steps you might want to take for that. Okay, that's today's lineup. Let's get started. The Fed's Open Market Committee is meeting this week to decide if it's finally going to let up on monetary easing policies by raising the benchmark federal funds rate, which has actually sat between 0.25% since about the end of 2008. There have been strong indications that this week's meeting is going to mark the start of a slow move back to inflationary control-oriented rates. And then you've got the recent economic news, both here at home and abroad, which has spawned a little bit of uncertainty about whether the Fed is actually going to make that move now or hold off just a bit longer. Into that breach falls any home buyer rushing to beat any major mortgage rate shifts spawned by the Fed moves. So today, I'm happy to welcome Lorraine Wellert. She's senior correspondent at Renfin to Big Money Real Estate to talk about what she's found in her reporting on the issue and what home buyers are doing to weather against this uncertainty. Welcome to Big Money Real Estate, Lorraine.
Thanks, Elise.
So the title of this story that we want to talk about is what happens if mortgage rates hit 5%? Home buyers say they'll cope. How are you finding that they're coping?
Well, we surveyed more than 3,000 home buyers, our Redfin customers, back in July. This was after Yellen had signaled very strongly that the Fed was considering a rate hike by the end of the year. So we asked them, you know, if rates go up to 5%, what will you do? And almost all of them said, well, we'll just keep looking for a house. We had 44% of them say, yeah, you know, I'll just like lower my expectations. I'll go for something smaller, something less expensive, but it's not going to change my, you know, it's not going to deter me from buying.
So these home buyers are still going to buy a house. They're just going to either buy a smaller house that's more affordable, or maybe they'll change neighborhoods.
Yeah, exactly. Some people, we had another large group, 20%+ said that they would save for a larger down payment so they could still buy the house they wanted. So they're, you know, they're coping, right? They're finding ways to still get the house they want or get a house. They're not going to be deterred by an uptick in rates.
One of the things that I thought was most interesting about your survey is that fewer than 5% of buyers actually list mortgage interest rates as their top worry. They're much more worried about affordability, which is, of course, mortgage interest rates. That plays together completely. They were another chunk was concerned about competitions from buyers, and then 14% said inventory was their top concern. Why do you think that home buyers don't list rising mortgage rates as something more of a concern for them?
Well, that really surprised us, too. We went into this survey thinking that mortgages were going to be the big story, and as you point out, they weren't. But as you also said, rates do play into affordability, right? So, and we all know what home prices have been doing the last year or so. It's crazy. I mean, we're going to put a report out on Thursday showing another double-digit increase in prices in San Francisco, for example. So I think that everybody sees, like, the bottom line, which is the price. And it's a daunting number. It's scary. More and more people can't get into home ownership or can't afford to move up, and so mortgages sort of recede into the background of this, you know, this scary increase in prices that we've been seeing. So you know, we're making the case that, you know, a gradual increase in rates might actually serve a purpose in slowing down some of this overheating in price.
Well, nothing's going to slow down San Francisco as long as you keep minting billionaires, you know, every 20 minutes, it seems like. But aside from, I know that you're in quite a lot of the markets now across the country. Are you seeing home prices rise that same rate anywhere else? I mean,
No, we have seen, you know, there are a lot of hot cities. Denver is a good example. D.C. is still really strong. But now, you know, there are a lot of places in the country where, you know, growth is sort of normal, like Chicago would be a good example. And you can still buy an affordable house in a, you know, a good neighborhood. So, you know, there are pockets of kind of craziness. Like, you know, we all know that it's, you know, housing is local. But, you know, it will be interesting to see if in some of these hotter markets, if a rate hike does have an effect on price.
My thinking is that you're really going to have to see mortgage interest rates hit a lot higher than 5% to slow things down. Although we're going to see this mortgage interest rate rise begin at sort of the 9-month out period of the presidential election. And so I have yet to see the first survey on are you going to buy in a presidential election year, but I know it's coming because historically, and as long as I've been covering the real estate industry, and I've seen many presidential election cycles, in all cases, I can't think of one, home buying and home selling slowed down in advance, 6 months to 9 months in advance of the actual presidential election, as people got very concerned about which way the country was heading, who the leader was going to be, and how that was going to play out into different home buying policies, interest rates, and all the rest. Are you starting to see anybody think about this or talk about this over at Redfin?
We haven't yet, but yes, this is exactly what happens. And so we could be seeing two things happening at once. Like you said, the usual four-year slowdown from the presidential campaign at the same time that the Fed is starting to raise rates. So we could have a twofer, you know, early next year.
It should be very, very interesting. Lorraine, thank you so much for being with us and sharing some of the findings.
No problem. Good to be here.
Lorraine Wellard is senior correspondent at Redfin. Every time interest rates rise, I get the same complaints from borrowers about lenders who fail to lock in rates, or from lenders about borrowers that misunderstand the process and think they have a mortgage rate lock and an interest rate when in fact they don't. Interest rates change daily, and at times they change hourly. That depends on what's going on in the bond market. You don't get an interest rate until you officially lock in that rate. But you can't simply walk into a mortgage broker's office and ask to lock in today's rate for a mortgage. You actually have to apply for the loan, and then you have to pay certain fees in order to secure that interest rate. Now, every lender has to give a borrower certain documentation following a loan application. That's the good faith estimate, and it details all the information about the loan terms, how much you're going to be paying for it, and the rest, and you have to get that in 3 days. When you go over that documentation, it should show you whether the interest rate on your loan is actually floating or locked. So you got to make sure that you read the documents. One of the things you're also going to get down the line is a rate lock disclosure. And that's how you know for sure that the rate is locked and at what interest rate. As long as you read the documents and you make sure that all of them are together, you should never have a problem knowing whether or not you have a locked-in rate. In the past 10 years, borrowers never complained about locked rates as interest rates kept drifting lower, right? As they were going lower, you want to get that lower interest rate. So if a lender forgot to lock you in, that was good. Or if they did, it was because they didn't want to be locked out of the lower rates. But when interest rates go up, borrowers yell and scream anytime they fail to lock in a rate, even though these days they're still getting an interest rate that's historically low. And I've said this before, the first loan my husband and I got for our house was 11.75%. Yes, that is 11% plus another 0.75%. So if you happen to be annoyed about missing out on locking a slightly lower interest rate, you have to understand this. You still have a low rate. It's still a really, really good rate. And it's never advisable to try and time the market anyway. Now, if for some reason your loan officer lies to you, yes, that happens too, or fails to lock in your interest rate after you take the proper steps to do so, you probably have a good case to have the mortgage lender honor that rate lock request. You'll have to deal with a manager or other person at the institution at that point. And of course, you want to make sure that you have all of your written documentation, because if it isn't written and you didn't receive a disclosure, it probably didn't happen. Now, if the bank or other institution fails to work with you in an honorable way to fix the problem caused by their loan officer, you might want to consider filing a complaint with the CFPB, Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. After spending a good chunk of your life paying off a mortgage, it's a huge relief to make that final payment and free yourself from your obligation to a lender. But before you wash your hands of that relationship and shred those records or burn them in a pile in the backyard, make sure that the lender's records are straight and that the satisfaction of your debt has been publicly recorded. When you take out a mortgage, you sign a promissory note that makes it your personal obligation to repay that debt. You also sign a mortgage that gives your lender a lien on your home. Now, the mortgage gives the lender the right to foreclose on the home, sell it, and satisfy whatever debt is owed if you fail to pay up each month. That mortgage document is in the form of a piece of paper, and the original version of that mortgage is supposed to be recorded in the local office that handles document recording. Sometimes it's called the local recorder of deeds office. Those filings give notice to the world that your lender has a lien on your property, which can prevent other lenders from giving you additional loans. Or if the lenders decide to give you a loan secured by your home, they'll know that they're secondary to your primary lender. It's therefore in your best interest to have the certificate of satisfaction recorded publicly so that other lenders can see that the lien has been released, just in case you ever need to take out another loan on the property or when it comes time to sell the home. Conscientious lenders will send you the original note and mortgage, which with each of them stamped canceled. And that way you have your documents back and you have ultimate proof that the loan has been paid in full. Unfortunately, some lenders are slower at getting the documentation out. And the only thing you can really do in these cases is continue to call the lender, ask to speak to someone in the lien release department, and press them on when this information, the documentation, is going to be sent to you. Eventually, the lender should send the document to the recorder's office and send you your original documents back. And if this doesn't happen within 6 months of closing or 6 months of paying off the loan, you're going to want to get on the phone and start to press your case. I hope you enjoyed today's episode, and I want to just send a big thank you to Lorraine Wellert from Redfin for being on today's show. So if there was anything you missed, you don't need to worry one moment about this. You can find the show notes to this episode at thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes if you haven't already. Please give us a rating or a review while you're there. You can do that by searching for The Elise Glink Show in the podcast section of iTunes. And hello, I've got another podcast, Monday Morning Marketing with Elise Glink and John Byrd. And if you check it out, we'll offer you some extra marketing, PR, and social media advice. And the reason we do this is because John is the former CMO of a huge global law firm. He's also a lawyer. He started his life as a journalist, and I run ThinkLink Media, which is a digital content agency, and we do all of these things for all of our corporate clients. So if we can help you with this kind of stuff, we would love to do it. So you can find the Monday Morning Marketing with Elise Glink and John Byrd podcast, also on iTunes, or in the blog section of my digital content agency website, thinklinkmedia.com. Okay. Wow, that is the end of another episode of The Elise Glink Show. I'm still your host, Elise Glink. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great week.